Blog Talk Radio.
You definitely have to try to be about to get gas because you see my radio show. Yes, tonight is the one and only Arthur Ben Dirk out of New York City. I think we got him on the line. We're going to start the show in just a minute. New York flavor in there, getting me sick. Getting me in the right mood to get my show started this Friday. Once again, it's yours truly, DJ Gatsby, a.k.a. Mr. Growing the Sexy, voice of Reverend Lit. And now, they call me Gatsby, the book promoter. We got my man, Ben Burks, in the house. Yo, Ben, you with us, man?
I'm with you. What's up, man?
All right, Ben Burks in the building. Straight out of New York City. The conference author. And so talented, so many awards, so much recognition that you've been given for your books, man, and your writing, man. It's just a pleasure to have you on the show again.
And thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
All right, well, tonight we got Ben, old friend of the show, man. Me and you've been, I've been knowing you, you know, like for a few years now. We go back to, I don't know, Wounded, Monster, Love and Happiness, Daddy's Girls. I've been following you for a while and been working with you for quite a few years, man. And great books that you've been putting out.
Thank you.
All right. So people that don't know you, man, give them a little background, who you are, where you're from, and how you ended up on my show tonight.
I'm Ben Burgess. I'm an author, I'm a father first, I'm a detective, I'm just a guy trying to make it in life. So.
All right, that's a short version, man, that's a short version, you know, we got to respect that, you know, I know you're a proud father, I know you're a member of the New York City Police Department, and that daughter of yours, she's everywhere, man, beautiful little girl. I'm always seeing pictures of her, man, and your family, and you know, congratulations, man, on kind of balancing your career, your writing, you know, and your family life. I know it must be tough, man, but you know, from what I see following you, doing a great job, man, and you know, hats off to you, man, for the way you're handling all of that. Man.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
All right, so we're going to get right into it, man. Ben Burgess Jr., he's the author of award-winning novels such as Monster, Wounded, Love and Happiness, Daddy's Girl, and his latest book, Black and White. He's an active performer and spoken word poet. He's also, he uses his love of writing to inspire and influence youth to strive for what they believe in and to never give up on their dreams. His novels, Monster and Wounded, I understand are currently being used in schools in Manhattan, New York City, and that's a huge thing. Like when you get your books in the hands of educators and anyone share them with young people to try to teach them things about life and become better young men and women, man, is real cool, man. I know you got to feel good about that.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that.
Okay. And business also has a bachelor's degree in business management and a master's degree in educational leadership. As we mentioned before, he's proud father of his daughters, Jalen and Jacqueline, and he's actively trying to improve urban neighborhoods and communities, man. So, you know, we tip our hats, man, because people don't know a lot about authors, people such as yourself. You know, they just know that you write books. They like the books that you write. And, they don't really get a chance to know the person behind the books. Real quickly, man, the book Black and White, that's the book I wanted to talk about tonight. How did that story come about? We're going to talk about the book in a minute, but, you know, I've looked at some of your work, you know, and you've tackled different topics in different ways. And all your books have a main theme of strong characters and story development. They all have that same characteristic. But this book, Black and White, kind of took your writing a different turn. You know, you showed the side of your literary talents that hadn't really been seen before. So tell us a little bit how the book Black and White came about.
Well, I was looking at, you know, current events, like with, you know, the presidency and how the world is in conflict. I was looking at race relations, and how I feel like they've been deteriorating ever since the election. And I just felt that this book was needed for its time. Like, with everything I do, I try to, like, broaden people's perspective so that they see the world in a different way. Because, you know, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So,
okay.
And another cliche quote, but if we change the way we see things, we'll see that things will change. So sometimes I feel like if you see the world and somebody through somebody else's eyes, it can broaden your, because when you listen to, you know, other black people speak, when you listen to other white people speak, they always feel like, most people feel, you know, that the other race doesn't understand them. And we all, black and white, Spanish, Asian, everybody has little biases, and that's just fact. We all do it.
Sure.
And this book is to show that you can't judge a book by its cover, that we all have these biases, and if we have to take the time to get to know people before we just assume that they're a specific way. For example, like when I'm out in the field sometimes, people will yell at me and they'll curse me out and they'll be like, "You're an Uncle Tom and you work for the white man and you don't care about black communities and stuff like that," when that could be further
okay.
from the truth. And they don't know me per se. They're angry at the uniform, but they're angry at me because they feel, they're assuming that it is that way. They don't know that above anything, above everything, that I'm all about uplifting our people and doing things for the community to show that positive black people is not the exception to the rule. Because a lot of times, you know, I believe some people assume that black people are lazy and uneducated, and, you know, they don't look at us as being, like, you know, they look at us as being primitive compared to being educated. So
sure.
That's my assumption. Again, that's one of my biases. So I wrote this book to show everybody's perspective. It's told from a black woman's perspective. It's told from a black man's perspective. It's told from a white woman's perspective. It's told from a white man's perspective. Because I wanted everybody to read it and see that we all need to change. It's not just one person. It's not just one side. Everybody needs to look at themselves in the mirror and change. Me included. I wrote the book. There's things I needed to change.
Sure. Yeah, the book is very deep, man. It you know, it touches on topics that are going to be very divisive. It touches on topics where people will, you know, kind of form an opinion without even having the facts. The synopsis of the book, and I'm going to read it real quick, tells the story of when a prestigious law firm of Wayne, Rothstein, and Lincoln catches two major cases. And these two major cases that these lawyers are taking on are headline grabbing cases. So the first one is a rape case where a white NBA star is accused of raping a black stripper. Something you could easily happen, something we could easily believe, you know, the stereotypes, you know, the rich white guy, you know, and the black girl's a gold digger. May not be the case, but when I read the book, that was the first thing I thought. The other murder case is where a black man, you know, rapper, Already we get the stereotype about hip-hop artists, violence, drugs, sex, lack of respect for law enforcement. This black rapper is accused of killing a gay couple and two policemen. You know, and that right there is like, he's guilty. He's done. Even if he didn't get it, whatever suspects that they get, they're going to plant the gun, they'll plant the weapon, they'll frame this cat because they got to have somebody, you know, pay for this. So, you know, my eyes was wide open. I was like, okay, I want to see how this story manifests itself and see how he tells it. But the twist was, when you get the two cops, you know, Ben O'Neill and Ben Turner, to handle these racially charged litigations, that was the kill right there for me. I don't want to do any, you know, spoilers for the book, but when I saw that, I said, oh, this is nice. This is like some NCIS or, you know, these crime shows on TV when they say they're snatched from the headlines. The synopsis goes on to say that the case hits emotional chords with the two lawyers and forced them to recommend their interracial relationships and families. And it asks the question, will the racial tension of these cases destroy them or make them stronger? When I first read the book, I didn't know whether, you know, the lawyers were the central characters or the accused, the rapist, or the murderer. And as the story went on, it unfolded and that everybody had their own demons, racial demons to deal with. What kind of reviews? What kind of reaction have your readers or, you know, even family and friends given you as the result of this racially charged book? What's been some of the reactions from some of the people personally that you know?
Personally, I've been getting very positive feedback from all races because they felt that, one, it wasn't too preachy. They felt that it wasn't one-sided. I'll be honest, I had a white reviewer. She told me, she was like, I'm not going to lie, when I didn't want to read the book because she was like, I didn't want to hate myself reading it. And she was like, reading the synopsis, she felt that it would be a anti-white book. And she was like, oh, God, I'm going to read this and hate myself. But she said she read it and she felt it was balanced. And she did not like how black people were treated. And she felt bad for them. She also appreciated that I didn't make all white people look like devils. So that was positive for a lot of black women appreciated how the different depictions of black women throughout the book. Like, it wasn't the stereotypical angry black woman. It wasn't the woman who's like super submissive and like a victim. Like, there were strong black women in there. Like, Ben's mother was a strong woman. Gabby was even a strong woman. Like, his cousin, even though she had her problems, she was a strong, like, they all had their, there was all different types of black women in the book. And it, you know, like, I tried to tell the story in a balanced way. I tried to tell it so that everyone can learn and benefit from it. As far as the reviews and people's, like, perception of it, it's been very positive.
Yeah, I've seen the reviews on Amazon as well, some of Goodreads, very favorable. It was a departure from the other books that you've written. I mean, your books are very deep, and they have a message. The subject matter is clear. You know, you don't tippy-toe around whatever the subject is. You know, you explain it very clearly, and you put the reader right in the story. When I met you, I think the first book that I read by you was Monster. And I think that, yeah, at that point, I think you were on my show or I had interviewed you at some point about that particular book, you know, about a young man exploring his, you know, sexuality and relationships. But you went on to write a few more books, Wounded, for one, Love and Happiness, another. And then there was another book that I didn't get a chance to read, and that's Daddy's Girl. And at that point, yeah, I didn't get a chance to read that book, but I was curious because you had won these Reader's Choice, Reader's Favorite Awards back-to-back. I think 2 years or 3 years, everything you released, they were recognized and you know, you won medals for. I found out about that organization. It's a very good organization. They have lots of people who they recognize for their work. I think Madonna Marie was on the show last week. She was also won awards for them and had her books recognized. But your book, Daddy's Girl, I didn't get a chance to read that. Tell us a little bit about that book. I mean, we're going to talk more about Black and White, but that was one of the books that I was interested in asking you about once I had you on the show. So tell us a bit about the book, Daddy's Girl, and how that came about.
Well, when you look at father, whenever I write a book, I try to see what hasn't been done. Like, I don't want to write something that somebody else wrote. I want to write something that we can all relate to, but that it's like it's different. I don't like to do the same thing everybody else does. So seeing that I have a daughter, I was thinking, I'm like, you know, there's not really any good positive father books. Usually they're drunks or rapists or they're deadbeats. And I wanted something positive for fathers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right. So I wanted to write a positive book for fathers, but I was also looking at it. And how this all came about is that I asked a bunch of women during a book signing for Love and Happiness. I said, do you believe that a single mother can raise a boy to be a man? And 99% of them said, absolutely. And I said, do you believe that a single father can raise a girl to be a woman? And 99% of them said, absolutely not. So I said, why not? And there was numerous reasoning for why they felt that a father could not raise a girl to be a woman. And with that, I was like, you know what? I really want to delve into that. So I actually dated a girl whose father raised her. So you could say she was kind of like the blueprint of that idea I had. I wanted to write a positive book about fathers. And I was like, the extra niche that I wanted for it is that I've never seen a book written about a father, a single father, raising a biracial child on his own. I've never seen that. So I said, I want to write that book, and I want to tackle that subject and how that feels. And this was something that was always brooding in my mind, because when I wrote Monster way back then, it was always something that I was thinking about. Because the girl, the protagonist from Daddy's Girl, is the girl that Ken ends up with in Monster. All of the books are connected. So that's who he ends up with, and it's pretty much her backstory. So it tells her backstory, and it kind of tells what happens after Monster.
Wow. Yeah, I got to get a chance to read that book, but I didn't read it yet. I admire your work, man, and I've been following you for a long, long time. It seems like a long time, but then again, it seems like a short time because, you know, you're still in the game. You know, you're still writing books. You're still doing what you love. Your readers still following you. Your work is still being recognized, not only here in New York on the East Coast or just in America, you know, all over the world, man, and you're really, really getting a lot of recognition. Once again, everybody, it's DJ Gatsby. You're listening to WBMG Radio Show. My guest is Ben Burgess. He's an author and police officer, New York City detective, a father, and a very passionate brother about the black community, how to make it better, and how he can be a positive force in doing that. We talked about that book, Black and White, man. It's one of the most powerful subjects you've touched so far. Again, as I said, I read your other books, very interesting, but this kind of took you, you know, let me see a different side. The book is deep. You know, I want to recommend it to some of my white friends and also to some of my black friends, because you get a lot of black people, you know, we're all different. People think we're all the same. We look the same and think the same, but you know we're all different. And we all have different aspects about race, racism, and discrimination. And that all seems to change when you start interacting with somebody from the other race. It gives you a different perspective, and it lets you kind of understand them better. But it also makes you think that that's for this person. It's not for everybody. In your line of work as a police officer, detective, how do you feel, you know, racism and discrimination is manifested out there, you know, in law enforcement? Because you deal with it all the time, you know, with whether it's an arrest or whether it's, you know, testifying in a case or even kind of settling a dispute when you're out there on the street. So how do you feel about race relations right now, man, you know, as a police officer, so as a law enforcement officer?
I feel that with a lot of things, it's a cultural thing. I feel that I give it to you like this. Sometimes I'll go to speak at community centers and stuff like that when they ask me to talk about books, but it always ends up with me, you know, talking about law enforcement and stuff too. And they say, you know, we don't want these white cops in our communities because they don't understand us. And they were like,
wow.
We wish we had like black cops or like, you know, Hispanic cops in our communities because they'd understand us better. So I said, okay, so when are you going to take the test? And they say, nah, son, I'm not doing that. And you hear, they stacked it against me because they put the education on there and I didn't go to school, right? You need 60 college credits or military. So then that's one excuse. Then you hear, nah, I'm not doing that because then I'll be arresting my own and I'll be working for the white man and doing that. So that's two.
Mm-hmm.
Then you hear three, nah, because there's some real crazies out there and I'm not risking my life for that. So now you heard three excuses, right? And here's the thing. If you're not a part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So if you want the dynamic of things to change in your community, you got to be a part of that change, right? And you see these white kids who do become cops. Their parents are cops. Their families have been cops, right? This is tradition for them.
Tradition.
And they might not live. They might not live in your community, but they're going to be in there because they're going to take the job. And you see, like, it's empowering for us as a community to take this job. One, you're going to have a pension for the rest of your life. Two, you have a respectable career where you're making money and you're making legit money and you're doing it the honest living, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's a cultural thing. If you live in a city and somebody's lived in the suburbs their whole life and they're now working in the city, it's a culture shock. So while you might be loud because that's your personality, it could be coming off as abrasive to somebody else. And now they're thinking that there's a problem and they're going to address your loudness with loudness. So now you're like, who are you getting loud with? And now it causes a problem. And it is a culture thing. Like for us, you know, we could be like, all right, he's just being loud and being crazy, but he's no threat. He's just, his bark is bigger than his bite. And we could see that because we know people like that. We've experienced people like that.
You grew up with a family
member. Yeah. But if you're not in those communities and you're not used to that, there's a problem. And so, like, there are some people who are, you can say, they're either culture shocked, and there are some that are just plain bigots, and that's just fact. But that's on all sides, and
yeah,
that is like, that's a problem that needs to be addressed. And I feel like the best way to address it is to actually interact with people. Like, I'm not going to lie. When I first became a cop, I was very homophobic. I was super homophobic. And then as you start working with different types of people, especially some that are gay and lesbian, you start to realize, oh, shit, they're real people just like me. They're regular people, you know, and it kind of dissolves that, you know, those biases you have, because you're like, okay, they're not all like this. They're not all bad. They do think like me. And for me, that's how I try to tackle racism. I try to, when I meet people of different races, I try to show them that I'm not the negative stereotypes that you see on TV. I'm not going to rob you. I don't say, nah, I mean, every 5 seconds. Like, there is substance to my, there's substance to who I am as a person.
Sure.
And I feel that's the true way to combat racism, is by showing them through your actions that you're more than your skin color.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, I tip my hat to you, man. I used to always say thank you for the service when I meet military veterans. And I recently started saying thank you for the service when I meet people in law enforcement. Because, you know, no matter what the relationship is or no matter how the media paints law enforcement officers or even how, you know, the minority community paints law enforcement, there is still a deep and profound respect for the good that they do. You do serve and protect, even though there are some cops who give police a bad name, and even the criminal justice system gives us a bad name as well. You still need to understand that without law enforcement, there's a lawless society, and there are people who are out here to do you and your families harm. So I don't care if it's a black cop, white cop, Latino cop, racist cop, bigoted cop. At the time I need assistance, at the time I need help, you know, or somebody's been shot, robbed, car accident, what have you, you're not concerned about that. All you want to know is, this is a professional. Can he help me? Can he help my family or my loved ones survive a particular situation? And for that, man, I tip my hat to you, man. Now, I got a question for you, and this is, you know, usually law enforcement falls on either one side of this. With the shooting at the school in Florida and the number of shootings that are happening in America today, the central focus is on gun control. Now, and when I hear this debate, you know, once you take it out of the politician's hands, you have the citizens and then you have law enforcement. And they're kind of on two different sides. Because you're thinking all the criminals have the guns and law enforcement want to keep the guns out of criminal hands. What do you think about the state of control and the systems violence that's going on with the automatic weapons and the military-style weapons here in America today?
All right, I'm going to keep it 100% real with you. This is how I view it. One, every shooting, every mass shooting that there has been with an AR-15. And now, like, whenever you hear gun control, you always hear everybody, oh, they're going to take away our guns and blah, 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 and this, that, and that, and the third. Right? Let's look at this. When they said this about Obama, they're like, oh, he's going to take our guns away. Obama was in office for 8 years, and guess what? No guns were taken away. All right?
No, that's propaganda.
And another fun fact, that when Trump got in office, what's it called, Remington, the gun and bullet maker, they're actually filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy because their stock went down because people stopped buying it because they didn't have the fear that they were going to have their guns taken away, so their money went down. All right.
Yeah.
That's that fake fear that people have that people are going to take their guns away. I feel that there's nothing wrong with having more check marks and you know, things like that to regulate who gets a gun. This kid was 18 years old and he could buy a AR-15, yet he couldn't buy a drink. That doesn't make any sense. So if we can say that we can regulate alcohol, yeah, if we can regulate alcohol, then we can regulate who gets a gun. If they knew that this kid was, what they're saying now, is autistic, then why was he able to buy a gun? So with gun control, there should be rules where kids like him should, one, not get a gun, and if you do have a mental illness, that you shouldn't be able to get a gun either. And that's just fact. You know, like, I feel that a lot of people are afraid that they can't have their guns, but let's be real. Not even hunters use AR-15s. What do you need that type of weapon for, anyway? If you want to have a rifle, fine. If you want to have a handgun, fine. But you need an AR-15 just because? So, I don't know. I'm pretty sure anybody who's listening to this who's a big gun buff is like, oh, what is he saying? But let's just be real here. And they're saying, but the gun didn't kill him. The people kill him. And
but as a law enforcement, being in law enforcement, you know, I would think that, you know, law enforcement would be against those weapons anyway, because those guns can be turned on you guys. It's not just out here killing innocent citizens and doing mass shootings. Those guns can be turned on law enforcement. You know, we haven't seen it, but that would be my fear and concern, not just the, you know, private citizens, but it's a lot of other groups they can go after with those weapons. I don't know,
man.
I don't know, but I like your perspective. I like your honesty and being candid about it. You know, because, like I said, military background, you know, and law enforcement, you know, people tend to think, you know, all cops think the same, or all black cops think the same. And it could be further from the truth that, you know, you guys, you know, you get up and go to work like everybody else. You want to come home to your family, just like any black man who goes out into the street and wants to come home to his family. And, you know, it's dangerous enough out there to add, you know, to add racism and bigotry and police brutality in the mix. So, man, I'm glad I had you on the show. The last time I talked to you, we never talked about your police background. Most of us were talking about books, and I learned more about it as I followed you, you know, in your writing career, man. I think this book is an eye-opening book. I think this book is going to be around a long time. I think it's the kind of book that kind of gives people a different perspective on race relations and the criminal justice system, simply because you have lawyers handling two cases which would be a major crimes cases. And I think it's cool, man. I really do. Hi, everybody. DJ Gassy, WBMG Radio Show with my man Ben Burgess. Thanks for being so open and candid, man. You know, we talked about the book. We talked about some other things. And I appreciate, you know, you coming on the show, man, and giving me this interview, man. I really do, man.
No problem.
All right, so for people that's following you on social media, I know you can tell them where you at, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or better yet, before you do that, man, what can we look forward in the future? Because I've seen your books, and you don't really write sequels. You don't really do part twos. have you thought about doing a part two to any of the books that you've written?
Well, all of my books are connected. So, like, Black and White, it's kind of like a backstory. It's kind of like a backstory, and it tells you a little bit of what happens at the end of Wounded, because Samantha's mother is in the book, and that whole aspect. So it tells you that backstory. Ben is actually Lynn's prom date from Daddy's Girl. So all the books are connected together. This next book that I'm writing on is going to be a little bit, it's going to be kind of like a sequel, but it's celebrating mothers, called Mothers. It's going to be a bunch of short stories. So Miss Wilson, who is the secretary in Black and White, it's going to tell her backstory of her son. And she is a single mother who's raising two sons, one of which has leukemia. So it's showing her struggle as a single mother who is raising a child who is terminally ill.
Okay.
So that's one of the short stories. So it's going to give you her backstory. Another short story in it is going to be about Lynn and Daddy's Girl. You know, her mother abandoned them, and she didn't grow up with a mother. Well, her mother is now trying to be in her life, and she finds out that she's pregnant. So she is upset with her mother. Yeah. She's upset with her mother, but, you know, she kind of does want to explore and find out what her other the other half of her is like. So it's showing that dynamic. And then the third story in the short stories is going to be about an Afro-Dominican girl who her boyfriend, the father of her child, her son, is abusive and, you know, beats her up. So she's trying to teach her son to, one, not be like his father, but at the same time not to hate his father. So it's a book celebrating the, you know, the different dynamics of mothers and to celebrate mothers in general.
Wow, sounds interesting, man. I can't wait to read that book, man. Thanks for the exclusive. And I'm assuming that's going to be released sometime this year, 2018.
Yes, I'm working on it actually right now.
All right. Well, yeah, listen, everybody, you heard that right there. Ben's new book, titled Mother, is going to be coming out very, very soon. Don't forget to follow Ben Burgess on Facebook, I guess Twitter and Instagram. I don't know if you're all on there. But you can get all of his books on Amazon. They're in paperback, Kindle. And I think audio edition is available for Love and Happiness.
I actually have three audiobooks coming out. I have the one for Daddy's Girl, I have the one for Wounded, and Black and White coming out soon as well.
I've become very fond of audiobooks, man, because I'm on the move so much, and I get a chance to look down at the screen and read. So audiobooks is definitely becoming very, very popular with me. Anything you want to say, shout outs, thank yous to fans, readers, and families before you go, man?
I'll say shout out to my friend Connie, my friend Chiara, Janelle. There's so many. my friend Vanessa.
Yeah, I'll take that along. I see your page.
Ebony, yeah.
I have a lot of friends, a lot of fans.
Yeah. So. Shout out to all of those people who are always supporting me.
Yeah. All right, but Ben, again, thanks for coming on the show. I promise that you come back on after your new book comes out. To everybody that called in, who tried to get through, you didn't get through. I didn't take no calls, man. Conversation was kind of intense. Anybody knows my show, I don't take a lot of calls. Sometimes I do, sometimes I not. This particular show with you, man, it was very intense, very informative. The flow of the conversation really didn't lead to any interruptions from callers. So anybody who tried to get through, I'm sorry I didn't put you through. But if you got specific questions or to talk to Ben, you can follow him on Facebook, and I'm sure he'll be glad to entertain you guys. So once again, it's DJ Gatsby, WBMG Radio. My guest tonight is Ben Burgess. Make sure you check out any of his books, Black and White, Wounded, Love and Happiness, Daddy Girls, Monster, etc. They're all available on Amazon.com. Yo, Ben, we're going to shut it down, man. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for your service to the New York City Police Department. I wish you nothing but the best, man, and be safe out there. And again, thank you for your service and protecting the people of New York City.
Thank you again.
All right. Good night, man. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Once again, DJ Gatsby, WBMG Radio, 6:30 p.m. every Friday night. Check us out at www.blocktalkradio.com/WBMG Radio Show. Peace.